Now, my next guest will be familiar to many of you, especially to News Talk Breakfast listeners during the week. He regularly joins Kieran and Shane with all of his rugby insights and his rugby opinions. But he's not here to talk about rugby this morning, despite the fact that it is a big rugby weekend. Alan Quinlan, thanks for coming in to talk to us on News Talk Breakfast at the weekends.
You're very welcome, Susan. I'm glad to be here.
Alan, I really wanted to talk to you because a couple of weeks ago on the show, we spoke to a woman whose 17-year-old son, Dan Hogan, had very sadly died by suicide. Dan was big into rugby, but on the other hand, he suffered really badly with anxiety and with depression. And sadly, he lost that fight. And Elaine, his mum, was really conscious that she wanted to get across that message of how important it is for people to talk. And in fact, she addressed his classmates at his funeral. She urged them, you know, to mind their mind as much as they mind their bodies. And I think that's a really powerful message. And I suppose it's something that you have been really promoting over the past couple of years and charting your path to recovery as such with all of that. So I just wanted to talk to you about that this morning. And I suppose we'll start at the beginning. How are you now?
I'm good. I think that's an incredible story for that boy's mum to be able to approach the situation like that, because obviously the utter devastation that has and the effect that that's had on her as a mum and the rest of the family, it's incredible. And unfortunately, I've encountered lots of people in lots of families and lots of situations in the last probably 10 to 12 years when I've had more emphasis and more understanding around about mental health and how important it is and what it is, and trying to educate and understand myself, because it was through my own adversity that I kind of hit a bit of a brick wall, and I had to try and figure out what was going on. I didn't really understand anything about mental health. I think I grew up in an era and a time where it was a kind of a hush-hush subject. And if somebody had a mental health problem in my community or in my area, they were kind of cast aside and viewed as being different. And, you know, thankfully, in the last kind of 10 to 12 years, as I said, since I started speaking about my own challenges, that stigma is gradually being broken down, and there's more compassion and empathy around trying to help people and encourage people, like Dan's mom, Elaine, is trying to spread her message to say she doesn't want to see this happening to anybody else. My story is a little bit different because I probably would have always had a level of anxiety in me that I didn't really understand or know growing up as a kid. And my thought process around that anxiety was, well, you can't see the problem and you can't really share this with anyone. You got to be tough. I was good at sports.
So when you were small, you think now when you look back, were you always kind of what people might think of an anxious child?
Yeah, I was. I was obviously very happy-go-lucky, and I was always very active, and I loved sport and I loved being climbing trees. We grew up in the countryside on a farm, and we had a wonderful childhood. We were always out playing, my brothers and neighbours and all the friends close by, and we were always active. But I suppose I look back now and I probably understand, by trying to learn more about myself and about my emotional well-being, that, you know, there was always probably an underlying level of anxiety, and we all have a certain amount of anxiety in us. There's nobody anxiety free, and we get nerves and we get a little bit of panic at times when we have difficult challenges, and that's natural, and we need a certain amount of anxiety to move, to get up in the morning and to deal with the challenges of the day, because if we didn't have that, we'd be totally laid back and we wouldn't achieve things. But I think sometimes I would have created more anxiety for myself by maybe lack of control in my mind, of worrying about things, overanalyzing, catastrophizing is a word I've learned in the last few years. And that's very common. And you know, when I chat to people and talk about it, they can relate to the same stuff. They catastrophize in their mind. We look to the future and we see negative things rather than positive things. And I'm always envious of people who have that nice, relaxed demeanor and control, and they're not trying to plan the whole day or plan the whole week or worrying about things that are out of their control. So I would have maybe, that's a natural thing that was probably in me. Maybe it's a genetic thing. But as I got older, that anxiety probably made me feel a little unwell in myself, and then made me feel depressed in myself. And I could get a wave of this anxiety, which would make me would inhibit my ability to perform or do chores or do jobs or do my homework. Or, you know, sometimes in a match, overanalyze when I'm playing a sporting game and, you know, not play well because I'm worried about the outcomes and what I'm going to do wrong. So it's kind of linked, that anxiety that I would have had would have been linked with negativity, and that negativity overcoming me. And, you know, sometimes the light at the end of the tunnel that we all want is kind of closed up in that particular moment. So I can relate to a lot of that stuff. And I ignored it when I was young because it didn't really, you know, I had a very happy life.
You always just think it's just part of your personality, you know, as in people probably always just think that's just a little side to me once I have it under control. But I guess the problem is then when you feel it
but
takes
I didn't have it under control. It just passed.
Okay.
So it was for a short period it passed and I just went back and played sport and did whatever. And, you know, there's a misunderstanding sometimes around a mental health problem that if you have a mental health problem, you can't achieve, you can't be a leader, you can't be successful in sport or in business or in life. And that's a bit of a misunderstanding and a misgiving about mental health. So I think mental health can affect anybody in all spectrums. I was very successful and lucky. I had a dream job. I went to work in a tracksuit. I was a mechanic before I signed my first professional contract. And for me, that wasn't work. I had a free car. I was getting paid to do something I would have done for nothing anyway.
But did that nearly make it harder? Because on one hand, you were living the dream and you were getting paid to do what you would have been doing anyway. But on the other hand, your anxiety probably meant that any judgment or any criticism or the fact that you were under the spotlight was probably harder for you to take.
Yeah, it added to it because obviously when you play professional sport, and I look at inter-county players now, sometimes the abuse that they get or the judgmental approach that people have about how they performed can really have a massive negative effect on them, and it can take away their confidence.
Did that really get to you when you...
What got to me was probably I created a lot of the pressure, and I added, because of this natural anxiety, I was worrying about how I would perform and would we win the game, where was I going in the future, will my next contract be there, will I get injured? So you're carrying a baggage with you, essentially.
So you're worrying about things that haven't happened before.
Absolutely.
They might even happen.
And then
they might never happen.
You kind of, at the time when you're young and you're carefree a little bit, you kind of just weather the storm a bit and go with this stuff. And so it created a frustration sometimes and an anger in me, and it did inhibit my performance. So, you know, it wasn't devastating. I was still able to have a wonderful life and I was very outgoing. Mm. And I was probably someone who was always able to speak publicly, and, you know, I was always, I don't know, it was a strange kind of confidence that I would have had to stand up in the class or or be captain of my team and speak and try and inspire other people. But I couldn't inspire myself because I didn't see my own value, which is very strange. And it's I'm still trying to figure that out. I didn't really understand anything about this stuff until, you know, I kind of hit a brick wall. And I still...
Alan, we might go to 2009 for me, because I was really struck in your autobiography. You described that incident in 2009 that meant that you missed out on the Lions tour as an act that was very brief, but the consequences were almost a life sentence for you.
Yeah, and it's still a life sentence because it'll never change. I've got to deal with that. And it was a life-changing moment. And, you know, sometimes I get guilty then talking about this because I think, well, somebody on the outside would say, well, it's just a sporting moment. You know, you missed out on a Lions tour. And it's very important to understand this for people who are healthy and well, that sometimes people, they catastrophize internally of what's happened and they don't see any light at the end of the tunnel and they think it's the end of their world. I kind of hit a wall at that stage with that because I had a couple of career-threatening injuries throughout my career, and it was amazing. I had incredible resilience on the rugby field to never give up and to continuously keep fighting. And even if we were losing a match by 30 points, I had a natural resilience in me to say, we're going to come back and we can win this, and not to stop. You know, some of the boys I played with went on to win over 100 caps for Ireland. I had 27. Now, some of that was, you know, a bit of bad luck as well with the injuries and the timing of the injuries when I got onto the Irish team. But overall, you know, I kept going. 2009, then I was 23rd or 4th man for the Grand Slam. When Ireland won a Grand Slam, I togged out for every game. So I was a whisker away for that incredible success. it was our second Grand Slam in 60 years or something. And, you know, I was disappointed after that. But then I kind of said, right, put my head down. I'm going to play really well for Munster for the rest of the season. I played really well in the quarterfinal against the Ospreys in Limerick. And the following week, I'm picked in the British and Irish Lions. And it was like, my God, this is just phenomenal. I went to cloud nine and my phone didn't stop buzzing for 2 days with text messages and people. And I think there was so many nice people who were happy for me because of that, maybe that resilience that I'd showed in the game. And here I was now, I couldn't go any higher. This was it. This was my reward. So I kind of accelerated the elation of that. I just had this surreal kind of feeling of contentment and elation after that. And it was just amazing. And then a couple of weeks later, we played Leinster in the Heineken Cup semi-final, and it was gone because, you know, I got suspended for 12 weeks and I missed out on the Lions tour. And then, you know, obviously the heights of that elation quickly turned to devastation, and that was it. It was gone, and that had a real profound effect on me. That was my kind of end of the world moment, because it was like, how am I going to recover from this? It had a real bad effect on me after
how
that.
How bad did it get after that?
Very bad, because most of my life I had that mentality, like I said at the start, of be tough, be hard, don't show any weakness, don't show any emotional vulnerability, don't cry, don't show any weakness or vulnerability. Now I was emotionally broken after this, and to be fair, it was wonderful people, you know, offered help and support. And I kind of did what I always had done, really, as I kind of pushed. I said thanks, but pushed it away, and I'm fine, I'll get on with this. But I wasn't internally, I was kind of broken, because I was saying, how am I going to go back now?
So how, when was the moment, can you bring me back, can you remember a moment where you thought, I'm actually not fine, I'm going to have to get
Yeah,
help.
I think, look, it was probably over a period of 4 or 5 weeks where I just couldn't sleep. I had no kind of motivation or desire to do anything. My season was over. Munster season was over. Where was I going? You know, I felt guilty. I felt ashamed. I felt everywhere I went, people were looking at me, and that's your man that got suspended. And, you know, because I was living in Limerick at the time. And in fairness, being a Tipperary man living in Limerick for so long, playing with Shannon, they're just, the people of Limerick were incredible. So passionate about the rugby, but they all knew their rugby. You know, you go to the supermarket, you get stopped about the match, you get an opinion. And here I was now trying to hide away from these people because I felt guilty, and I'd felt I'd let people down, a family down, friends down, people, coaches. I was really catastrophizing this. And look, it's important to understand that they're natural emotions. When you have disappointment in life, when you have upset, when you have trauma, you're entitled to feel sad and upset. But the wrong thing to do is to bottle it up. And it was just having a real, creating a real kind of dark cloud in my mind. And I just didn't see any way out. And I was suicidal. I was...
Were you suicidal?
Yeah, I was, yeah. But look, you know, you have to be very respectful to people who've been in that situation, families. And I'm very conscious of the fact that, you know, we all feel down at times. We all feel like sometimes in our life that we'd want to throw in the towel and give up. But, you know, feeling suicidal and you know, having an impulse to act on it. And I was getting into the kind of dangerous zone of wanting to act on it, because there was a kind of a darkness there that I felt, look, this is just the way it is. It's going to be negative. There was a lot of stuff going on in my head. There was a lack of control, and I didn't have that light at the end of the tunnel. But thankfully, my son, who's 10 now, was only a few months old, and I would head off in the buggy with him and go walking around Limerick and probably keeping the head down and hiding. It kind of tested my faith as well, because I would end up going to the church and lighting candles.
Really?
And, yeah, things like that. And, you know, just trying to say, God, this kind of feeling is not going to end.
Mm.
You know, they say time heals things. But it just felt each day it was getting kind of worse for me, because I wasn't sleeping either. And obviously, if you don't sleep, and
everything.
It does impact
yeah,
your
it does,
mental
yeah.
health, you know. So I couldn't sleep. And anybody tell you, if you don't sleep, you're a bit more irritable, and it's harder. The world's a better place when you sleep, even in a tough time,
yeah.
Tough times. But so that was the situation. So he was kind of, you know, he was kind of my light or my hope that I had to get strong, and his mum as well. So they were incredibly supportive, and they were the ones who had to live with me and probably could see it. The other part of this was I didn't want to trouble people. I felt that if I was going to tell people,
you're a nuisance.
Yeah. What can they do? They can't see this problem, and I don't really understand it, and I don't kind of see it getting better. So yeah, it was very difficult. But look,
so you did let the mask down and you asked for help.
Yeah. Well, I went to my rugby. GP. I went to my rugby doctor, and you know, immediately he saw that there was a certain amount of trauma there. He could probably see it in my face or my eyes or the tiredness in my face. And he showed a brilliant empathy and compassion, which was kind of lovely, because I felt straight away that there's a path here to recovery. He was amazing. Mick Shinquin, our doctor with Munster at the time. And we started a process to try and bring out some of this burden or this trauma that was internally inside me, and see if I could kind of heal it some bit and get back on track and create a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel. When I say to people, if you have a little bit of light at the end of the tunnel, no matter what the situation is or no matter what devastation you have, well, you'll try and go towards that light. And that's the way I kind of visualized it. I said, I want to see a little bit of light, and I want to feel this will get better, and that I can go back, not just play rugby, but I want to just be content in myself, and I want this madness that's going on in my
head
to go away.
What was that path to recovery like then? Did it involve medication, say, at the start?
Yeah, it did, Jack. Yeah. So it did. It did. And, you know, so I ended up taking sleeping tablets for a while just to try and some medication to try and get rid of the anxiety. So I was taking medication for a while that was going to try and get me to sleep. And, you know, we take painkillers and anti-inflammatories and Anadins and Panadols and all these things when we have a headache or something. So this was my headache, and I was open to the fact that anything that can help. So the picture slowly started to change, and I started to sleep a bit better. And then there was obviously a process where I went to a psychologist in Limerick, and he helped me kind of process a lot of this stuff, not just the rugby stuff, but maybe get control of the anxiety and stuff. And maybe sometimes the waves of negativity that would come over me. But I think creating an openness about your own vulnerability and your own feelings is a proactive way to deal with it.
So what's your motto now? Like, how do you check in with yourself? Or I suppose, what did you learn from all those years you have been on that recovery?
Yeah.
What do you say to yourself now on a daily basis, if you're starting to feel a bit
I have
off?
To try and remind me of the positives. Because I always kind of, this is the way I relate it in my head, you could have 95% positivity in your life and 5% negativity, which is probably a factor for everybody. But if you can't control the negativity and bat it away, that 5% can push away all the really good stuff that your fundamentals, like your family, your friends, what you've achieved, your own self-worth, your own value, all that kind of stuff. It can push them away. And that 5% can kind of engulf you for that period. And the world is a very pressurized place nowadays. It's a very judgmental world. It's a very macho world at times. But I'm really inspired by the people of Ireland, the schools, the workforce, employers, sporting organizations who are sending out positive messages. You know, suicides in Ireland. Yeah, I like that story about
Dan Hogan,
Dan Hogan, that devastating story. It's one size suicide is one too many. But I think I'm inspired by the change and trying to break down the stigma. But we must educate people, and we must educate our children about the importance of resilience and the importance of being open, not bringing home every problem to your parents and say, well, Johnny kicked my ball over the wall
but
today.
But
trying to have a more direct communication with our children and trying to see their triggers and trying to help them control their anxieties about, you know, their worry. And there is a lot of pressure on young kids around exams, and there's a lot of pressure on performance and to do well in life. And there's a lot of good stuff done by the HSC. There's a lot more to do. I think we need more services, particularly on weekends when people present in hospitals and support networks. But there's a lot of wonderful nurses, doctors, volunteers within the HSE who do as much as they can. We need more. Genuinely believe that, and this is really important for people who may be listening, who are healthy and well and haven't been affected. You must celebrate your happiness as well. Mm. We don't want to create a guilt. Their happiness creates light for somebody who's struggling and suffering. There's no quick fix solution. I still have waves of anxiety and negativity that I have to control, and I have to work on that. So it's a kind of an ongoing process, but I get very sad and upset and affected by, you know, those kind of devastating stories. And hopefully we can change the culture and the picture around that, and that we can get more people who are tuned into the fact that it is not a sign of weakness. It's a sign of strength if you open up, start a process that sometimes they'll take two steps forward and they might take two steps back, but that they're on a path that, which is more open and vulnerable.
Alan, it's been a pleasure to talk to you this morning. You will be back talking about rugby, I guess, with Shane for and sure. with Kieran next week. But thanks so much for your time this morning.
My pleasure, Susan. Thank you.